As the official healthcare provider of Minnesota United, Allina Health is focused on keeping our loons in top condition. And with expertise in orthopedics, sports medicine, heart care, and more, Allina has the team to keep your family in the game too. The experts at Allina Health take the time to get to know you as a whole person, helping you achieve wellness for your mind, body, and spirit. It's an altogether better kind of healthcare. Learn more at AlinaHealth.org. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Sound of the Loons. And what a, by the way, I should ask our new guest if he's got a loon call of his own, but we'll get to that in a second. I hear that's a big thing, but I get to be joined by the newest assistant coach, the newest member of Minnesota United, Dennis Lawrence. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me. And I appreciate you on this busy Thursday afternoon taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here with the loons, Kendra. So I'm looking forward to this conversation.
So did you work on your loon call on the plane ride over, or have you heard any of the other guys, the recordings of the loon call? Have you heard about this?
The only thing I've did my own research on and found out about is Wonderwall. So I'm looking forward to the Wonderwall song. In terms of everything else, it's one of those that you're just going to learn along the way.
Yeah, I don't think there's many people that have perfected the loon call. So if you don't, I think it's probably okay. Most people just end up making a fool of themselves. And that's why we do it. It's just to make fun of people on the Jumbotron. But maybe we'll get you doing that. I did hear you are a hot chocolate aficionado. Is this accurate?
It is very accurate. So obviously, for me, growing up in my lifetime, I grew up on hot chocolate, Nesquik and Ovaltine and things like that. So when I got to the UK, it was all about tea and coffee. And I was like, no, I'm not having that. It's got to be hot chocolate for me. So I've got a record that everywhere I go, I try to implement this got to be hot chocolate in the building. And funnily enough, I came in on Tuesday and there was a pile of Swiss hot chocolate on my desk here at the Loon. So it's definitely having an effect already.
So off on the right foot already, you're making the right impression. That's nice to hear.
Yeah.
You know, I will say a lot of the booths I've been in, I go for the hot chocolate because if I try to do the coffee, I have to add so many of those little tiny packets of sugar. It's almost embarrassing. I get this like giant pile. So if I just go to the hot chocolate, it's already got all the sugar in it and I don't have to make a fool of myself.
There we go. It just makes sense. The sugar is already added, so you don't need nothing else and you can manage your diet properly.
Now let's get into dive into, I don't want to start with the Minnesota United stuff. We see you, you're here, you're in Minnesota, you've got the crest on your top there, you've got your nice initials already, but I want to dive back farther into your soccer journey and your soccer life, your history. So you can really tell everybody and feel like they get to know you besides looking it up on Wikipedia or something. So who is Dennis Lawrence and where did this love of the game come from?
So obviously, I grew up in a family of five. I was born in Trinidad and Tobago. I was born in Trinidad, but it's one country, which is a twin island country. So you've got to say Trinidad and Tobago, but I was born in Trinidad, in the capital in Port of Spain. Grew up in a family of five. And ever since from a kid, I was involved in street football. There was a lot of guys that lived in the neighborhood with me. We used to play in the streets. So I grew up playing soccer in the streets in Trinidad and Tobago. That was most of my development, I would say. Moving on from there, you went to school soccer. And in my schooling time, I was never fortunate to be able to play in the first 11 for a lot of times because I was really, really small growing up. You wouldn't believe it.
Small, like short?
I was short. I was very thin. And a lot of the coaches wouldn't take the opportunity to put me to play because I was too small. And it got to the secondary schooling level where that was a major school tournament. And I think I probably only played about 20 minutes in that entire season. And basically, the coach just didn't believe that physically I'd be able to handle it. So it was always a battle for me in terms from that point of view. And to be fair, when I was going to secondary school, there was a old coach by the name of Tony Govaya. That was his name. He just spotted something and he just took me and he got me to join this local club he had. So I used to go training with the local club, etc. And then eventually that evolved where I got involved in professional, semi-professional it was at the time, with a club by the name of Bartire Ball Players. And then from Bartire Ball Players, I joined my first professional club. But I joined a professional club, but I was never actually paid to be a professional soccer player whilst I was in Trinidad. Because when I joined the professional club, the sponsor of the club was a lady by the name of Elizabeth Shea. And she owned a company making sanitary cups and containers. So she gave me a job working in a supermarket. So I started, that was my first job. I was playing soccer with this professional club, but I was actually working in a supermarket, which is a really big part of my life, because working in a supermarket is what I think gave me the grounding and the foundation to be able to build my life and build my career and to understand about responsibilities, because it was a very limited salary, you can imagine. Growing up in life, you was always told by your parents, you've got to become a doctor or a fireman or something of that stature. And all of a sudden, my first job opportunity was to work in a supermarket. And a very quick story about that is, I went the first day and I turned up and then I saw it was a supermarket. So I'm stood outside and I'm thinking, no, surely this is not going to happen. Eventually the supervisor came and he opened the gate and he said, right, you can get change in there. And I'm just thinking to myself, I'm not coming back here. I'm going to finish today and there's no way I'm coming back because I'm not working in a supermarket. And I went home and my best friend, he then said to me, right, what are you doing at the moment? I said, well, I'm doing nothing. I've just left school. He said, well, you're going to go back and work to the supermarket. So we had a good argument. And eventually, he forced me to go back. I went back the next day. And it turned out to probably be the best 4 years of my life, because the owner, the lady who ran it, she just took me as her son. And she opened my very first bank account, which was absolutely amazing. And how she did it. So basically, I was getting about 135 Trinidad and Tobago dollars. And I got my first salary, and there was $25 short. So I went and I saw her, and I was asking her, where's my extra $25? And she opened the drawer, and she handed me a bank book, which was my first ever bank account. So she literally said to me, I'm going to take $25 out of your salary each week.
Oh, and I'm going to
open that bank account for you. So you can imagine me at 18, going on 19 years old, I'm absolutely fuming about it because I want my $25. So anyway, we go on. And so I worked there for 4.5 years, some great people in the job. And from there, I was playing professional with this club by the name of Caledonia AIA. And during this period, I then left and I joined the Trinidad and Tobago Defense Force, which is the army in Trinidad and Tobago. And one of the reasons for that is because the army had the most strongest professional soccer team. But the biggest reason was that the league had just gone professional and a lot of the clubs wouldn't fulfill their commitments to pay salaries, etc. But if you joined the army team, that was a government institute, so you would definitely get your salary, etc. So I then joined the army, where I spent from 1996 to 2001 playing professional there. Whilst at this time joining Trinidad and Tobago as a national team player. The story behind the national team, one is that obviously I absolutely love basketball as well. So I used to play basketball as well as soccer. And went on trials for the national basketball team. And I got selected in the last 15 to go into a camp. And the same day I got selected, I got a phone call from the national and the 23 soccer team that they wanted me to join in the national soccer team to go on a tour to St. Martin. And I had a decision to make, which for me, it wasn't difficult because soccer was always my first preference, even though I love basketball. So I decided, and that's when I made my introduction into our national setup before in 2001, joining the national senior team, where I then went on to play for 89 times for Trinidad and Tobago, which is a absolutely incredible achievement for myself. Three of those games was in the World Cup in 2005, six, sorry, in Germany. which we played England, Sweden and Paraguay. So it was an absolutely incredible. During this period, I was in the UK at the time. I went over and I joined Wrexham. So I joined Wrexham in 2001. There was two other Trinidadians there, which was Carlos Edwards and Hector Sam and myself. So I was at Wrexham where I had an absolutely incredible journey because I had the highs and lows of starting off my soccer career, doing well, then having an absolutely terrible part, then having to overcome that to then settling again. From Wrexham, I then went on to Swansea City, another incredible club that we achieved good things. That's where I met Roberto Martinez. He was the manager, he was the head coach at the time. And then I finished off my career in 2010, playing with a club by the name of Crewe Alexandra. Actually, people would say that I finished off in Trinidad because I went home.
Yeah.
And there was a local club that the head coach had known him. And he said, look, I was 35, with the Gwynn and 35. And he said, look, just give me a two couple games. And we played in the CONCACAF tournament. So it was a club by the name of Jabloti. So that was my last club. And then from that period in 2010, that's when I decided, right, what next now? Because your soccer career is coming to an end. You're going to have to do something. So I decided to embark on my coaching licenses. And I then embarked on my UEFA B before going on to do my UEFA A and then UEFA Pro license. But during the period of my UEFA B, Roberto Martinez approached me because he was now the head coach of Wigan Athletic in the Premier League. And he said that he wants an extra coach, so he wanted me to come in. So he brought me in as a coach. So I started off my coaching at a very high level in terms of I was working in the Premier League with an under-21 team.
Which, just throwing you right in the fire.
There we go. So, you take what you learn as a player and you try and take it into your coaching, but it doesn't necessarily work like that. So I've been involved in the coaching now for probably around 13 years, 14 years, working at Wigan Athletic in the Premier League before moving on to Everton, where it's another challenge again. It's another step up. After Everton, then became the head coach of my country, Trinidad and Tobago, which we all knew about that era. It was a fantastic learning achievement for myself in terms of becoming a manager, becoming a head coach, becoming a lead. And then moving on from Trinidad and Tobago, I then went back to the UK, where I then joined Coventry City, where I spent another 3 seasons before I'm now land here at Minnesota United. So that's basically the journey in a nutshell.
So when did you grow to be? Are you 6'7"? Did I read that right?
I'm 6'6". I used to be 6'7", and for some reason, an inch has gone somewhere, so I'm now 6'6".
Okay, so when did you grow to be? Well, I guess you were 6'7", maybe when you were playing. So if they thought you were too small, at what point did you hit this growth spurt and skyrocket? You know, right. What was that?
When I left secondary school, I left at the age of 15. I was 15 going on 16. And during that period, there was like a half-court basketball court on the back end of my street in Trinidad and Tobago. And I used to play a lot of basketball. And I don't know, I'm just saying possibility, but during that period, that's when the growth spurt just hit. And I just started to shoot up and up and up. So I went this way. I never really got much more muscle on me, but I grew really, really tall and I just shot up. So within that period, between the age of 16 and getting to 18, that's when it all took place in terms of my height.
So the entire time that you're working at this supermarket, which was years, how much were you getting to actually play soccer? And did the owner of that supermarket ever convey to you how she came up with this plan and this idea in the first place? Why you, out of all the guys on the team, you know, why did she decide that you should come and work at the supermarket? Why did she decide to take you under her wing? How have you kept in touch with this individual? Are they still here on this earth? I mean, what is that relationship like? How did that all go down?
Yeah, so unfortunately, God rest her soul, she's passed away. And I think it's just me as a person, because I'm a very humble, I'm a very caring person. And I was always quiet. I'm very quiet. And for some reason, she just looked at me in the way that I conducted myself on the training pitch, during games, how I interacted with my teammates. And I think it's one of those things in life where it just happened. And she just saw me as this young guy, 18 years, going on 19. You know, she just felt the need that she wanted to help because she was that type of lady. And she just offered me this job. And as I said before, it was difficult for me at the time because to work in a supermarket was something that, no, you're not meant to be working in a supermarket. You're meant to become a fireman because that's your dream. So it was really difficult for me. And it's probably helped me in my life in terms of my daughter, because I now understood, because I didn't get it at the time, but that was my starting point in my journey in life. And it wasn't about getting there as quick as possible, about where the journey started. So I've tried to never ever put pressure on my daughter in terms of where you want to be or what you want to do. And I've tried to just support her. And it's the same way that I try to interact with the players by supporting the players in where they want to get to, where their journey takes them. So it was just something that happened. And I can't thank her enough for it, because I think it was the start of something great for me. And it's definitely helped me in my career in life.
When did you close that bank account? Did you ever? And how much money did you have in there when you closed it out?
The funny story about the bank account was, and this is why I'm so grateful for it. So obviously in 1999, my dad unfortunately suffered from kidney failures and passed away. And the funds that I had in the bank account is what I had to use to bury my dad. So it was an absolute miracle. And for it to happen in that way, that I was so outraged about this bank account. And because she wouldn't give me the actual bank book, she kept it in her drawer. And I only got the bank account when I was leaving the job. So for it to happen that way, it was unbelievable. So the bank account closed off, obviously, at that point, because I had to use it up to fund the burial of my dad, putting together funds with my parents, my mom. And that was the end of the account. But it definitely was a starting point in me understanding the value of how to manage finances.
What a crazy, like, blessing in disguise after, like, at the moment, you don't know what it means, but, like, you know, step after step. So, like, from that point forward, I don't know how it can start any crazier, but like then you get the call to join the basketball team and the soccer team on the same day, and then you have to make a choice, but then you have all these incredible steps through the rest of your journey. Did you just kind of the rest of your life to this point go, you know what, like, just gonna go with the flow, like each step is purposeful, you know, it'll just kind of be shown to me in that moment, even if it's arriving in Minnesota in the frozen tundra?
Tell you what, Kendra, that is probably exactly how it is. And that's probably how I am. So a lot of people talk about setting yourself targets and you want to achieve this. And that is great because it works for some. I'm the opposite. I just do my best or wherever I am and then see where the journey takes me, because it's worked so far and I've got no need to change it. I'm not saying that it's the correct way, but it's just my way. And it's the way that I enjoy doing it, because I think it's an exciting part in the end, because if you don't sometimes set targets, then you don't leave room for disappointment if you don't get to the target. So I just enjoy the ride. I try to enjoy every minute of everything I'm doing. Soccer is my love. It's what's given me my life in terms of being able to raise my family in the right way, be able to afford things. And be able to look at soccer players grow in their journey. Even when I was playing, I always had this thing about encouragement and getting my teammates to be on board with us. So I really enjoy that part. So I'm a bit of a freelance, humble, just see where the journey takes you and enjoy the ride.
So when you talk about when your playing career was coming to an end, you weren't necessarily one of those people that always knew you wanted to be a coach, but I'm assuming you still wanted to be close to the game in some way, shape or form and have an impact on these individuals. So is that how, kind of your thought process between then going and getting your license and then along your coaching journey, can you maybe state what you learned at each stop, like something from an individual or, you know, and then we'll get into, you know, how you met Eric Ramsey and what that relationship is like.
So that is interesting, because during my playing time, I can always remember. So I played under a manager at Wrexham. His name was Dennis Smith. And then I played under a manager for Trinidad, which was Matarano. And then I played for Roberto, and the three of them said the same thing to me during my time as a player, that one day you'll be a coach. And in my head, it was the total opposite. I don't want to be a coach because I could only see as far as playing. But then once you start getting to the end of your career, it then comes that point, what next? And I just felt at the time that because I've been involved in soccer for such a long period of time, how difficult is it going to be for me to say, for example, all of a sudden become a bank manager and start working an 8-to-4 shift or an 8-to-5 shift. And so I thought, well, look, I need to stay connected to the game of soccer. And what is the best way to stay connected to the game of soccer? Well, you've got the option of becoming a coach. So that's really where the journey of becoming a coach started, because I thought, well, hang on, I'm in the UK. The UK has got probably some of the best coaching structures you can put in place in terms of being certified, especially with the Welsh FA. They've been absolutely brilliant. And I actually still do work with the Welsh FA because I do mentoring as well. So I'm a coach educator. I'm working on coaches to obtain their UEFA B, their UEFA A, and their pro license. So that more or less is where, as exactly as you said, because I've been involved in soccer for such a long time, I just couldn't envision myself coming out of it and going and try and, you know, manipulate a totally different path. So I wanted to stay involved in soccer, and that was probably the best way for me to do it.
When you look at each one of those journeys, I know you just said they told you, you know, you're going to be a coach one day, but the styles, I'm assuming, of those three managers are all very different. And then when you went into coaching, was there any in particular thing, as you were an assistant coach or you coached with the 21s, that you learned different styles? How did you come to your style, especially once you became a head coach? How did you evolve into the coach that you are and establish your own style?
And that's the crazy thing about it. So when you come out as a player, you see so many different styles. You played under so many different styles. So you've been involved. And I've always said this to people. So you as an individual, as a coach, you've got your principles and your philosophies, the way how you see the game, the way how you want it to play. When you work as an assistant, your principles and philosophies become second. And you put it forward to the people that you're working above. But if the people above got their principle, you then have to come in line with theirs. So that's why it's important to find the match. I would probably say the biggest thing for me. So I grew up as a young kid, absolutely loving Brazilian football team, the national team. I think the first time I really got a good look at Brazil was in 1990 World Cup. And that's when they had Romario and Bebeto and these players, and I saw this team play, and I absolutely love the way that they play the game. I love the way that they play possession football. So for me, it's always been around that type of flair, that type of style, that type of thing. So I've always got this in my mind. But I think the most important thing is that one of the biggest things that I learned was you had to become adaptable. Because it's one thing for you as a coach to have your principles and your styles and how you want to do it, but then you need to evaluate your players to find out whether or not it fits. So you have to be adaptable. So even though I've got my style and my flair and the way that I would love to see the game play, you have to align it with what the material you've got, the time where you're working with. So that's more or less, you then become your own person. But I think the biggest time for me to be able to implement what I wanted to be was when I became the head coach at Trinidad and Tobago, because I'm now leading the ship. It's all down to me. And I went in with a clear vision. I knew how I wanted to play the game. I wanted to be in possession of the football. I wanted to be high intensity. I wanted to be aggressive behind when we don't have the ball. I wanted to be expansive when we had the ball. But then, as I said, I then had to learn to be adaptable, because even though that's what I wanted to do, I didn't think that I had all the right material to do it. So you had to then change along the way. So in an ideal world, I know exactly how I'd like to play if you can, but it doesn't always work like that.
When you look at the new head coach of Minnesota United, Eric Ramsey, and now it's his first head coaching job, and you've been there, done that for your first head coaching job. How did you meet Eric? What's that relationship like? And what was that maybe phone call like? How did that work? Like, hey, I'd really like you to come to Minnesota. What do you think of Major League Soccer? What, just walk me through all that.
So I met Eric in, I think it was 2021. We met on with the Welsh FA on a UEFA A license coaching course, because Eric and myself, we both, as I said, we both did mentoring for the Welsh FA. So we met then, and it's almost similar to this lady I spoke about, Elizabeth Shea. We just seemed to connect, and we connected and we worked together, doing classwork with the candidates. We worked together out in the grass, and for some reason we connected. We connected in the way that we spoke about the game. We connected in our beliefs, and we just developed a very good relationship. Eric obviously worked for different clubs. I worked for different clubs, but we always kept in contact. And prior to the Minnesota thing, there was already a couple instances that something could happen. So we always communicated. So we always had an idea that, yeah, we think we make a good fit. And I think for Eric, the most important thing is he's such an ambitious person. He's young. He's got so much energy. And he was very intelligent in recognizing the need to have somebody that's been there before and has done it. Because the one thing Eric knows is that with myself and him, I'm going to give opinions and I'm going to let him know exactly what I think, which is sometimes what you need as a young manager. You need somebody to say the uncomfortable things that you don't want to hear. But that's my job. My job is to say the uncomfortable things. And the one thing we know is that once we, as a staff, Eric, myself, Cam, AD, all of us working together, we can have many disagreements inside our domain. But once we hit that pitch, we're on the same page. And it's all going to happen because Eric's going to lead and we're going to drive what he wants to happen. So I think in terms of our principles, our beliefs, our mentality, we are very aligned in that sense, even though we have different views on certain things, which is a healthy situation because we can't all be the same. So that's where I think it's a very good balance in terms of me being able to be here with a young head coach who's very, very enthusiastic, and he's gonna become successful without a shadow of a doubt. And I'm just here to be that security in the background to make sure, right, let's get it right.
So how did the phone call work, or the communication? And then I just want to know why Major League Soccer? I mean, did he have to sell you on it? I mean, clearly you're familiar with the league. It's growing. There's no lack of talent and, you know, in this league and what's come to this league. But what made you excited about this opportunity?
So if we go back to the telephone call, so it was a very strange thing. I was at Coventry. We had a couple of days off. So I had an apartment that I rented. It's in a place called Warwick, which was closer to Coventry. So I went to my actual house, which is in Wrexham. So I was there for a couple of days. And it was a Tuesday, and it was just around lunchtime. I was just packing up to head back to the apartment. And as I'm leaving the house, the phone rings and it sees Eric. So I take the call, and he just straight out just launches at me, right? This is what's happening. I've got a Minnesota job. I want you to go with me. And I'm like, wow, okay, right. So he gave it to me all. And then he just basically said, look, I'll come back to you in an hour. Just let me know what you're thinking. So obviously at this point, the first thing is then I speak to my daughter. She was at home. I speak to my wife. And they were both really, really excited about it. They've always been supportive. And they're like, right, you got to go for it. So the conversation with Eric about the opportunity in Minnesota, from Eric's point of view and mine, it was a no-brainer. Because as I said, this is somebody that I've got a lot of respect for. Once I started to speak to the people at Minnesota. So anyway, in a long story short, Eric rang me back and I went, right, we're going to go for it. I'm with you. And then as we went along, I started to speak to people at the soccer club. I think the first one I spoke to was Chelsea. I spoke to Khaled. I spoke to Angie. And these people were absolutely amazing. And as we went along, you can just get that feel that this is a club that you want to be involved with. This is a project that you want to be part of. And obviously, we had a player to play. I had a player to play here, which is Kevin Molino.
Yes.
So I decided to give him a call, and we spoke. And then I clicked on a link, and I looked at the very first game for Minnesota in the MLS, which was that snow-ridden game.
Yes.
And It was something special, even though I was nowhere near it. And then you started seeing about the Wonderwall song and all these things. And immediately you got the feel, yeah, this is the right thing to do. And I think from that point, it was always full speed ahead. Right, this is going to happen. So obviously I had to leave Coventry. Now, in terms of the MLS, because I lived in Trinidad and Tobago, I was more or less wrong when the MLS first started. I know players that played, like Stern John, who played for Columbus, and Ansel Elcock, who played for Columbus. So I knew when this whole MLS franchise thing started. And in a funny way, because I think the US probably got involved in soccer late on, the growth was absolutely incredible. The rapid speed that it took place, and you can see that this was always going to be something that was going to just take off like a rocket. And if you look at it today, you can see where it is now. If you look at the types of players that are actually playing in the MLS, it's a testament to everyone involved in putting together this entire organization. So in terms of what I was coming into, it wasn't a surprise for me. It was just about learning the different ways, how to structure certain things in terms of the rosters and all that, which I'm still getting to term with. But in terms of a soccer league, and in terms of knowing the organization of the United States of America, it was not even a second guess for me, because I knew exactly what I was coming into.
So what was your experience when you landed? What has it been like? And what has it been, a week that you've been here? Am I off on my dates? How long have you actually been in Minnesota? And do you have a jacket and boots and all that? Or somebody hook you up? Probably Angie. She does everything for everybody.
Right. So Angie is brilliant, but I came prepared because I've been in Minnesota in 2018.
Yes.
Because Trinidad and Tobago, we played our first Gold Cup game here in the stadium. That's so crazy. I knew about the stadium.
Yeah.
I knew about the training facilities. It wasn't as cool as it is now, and it didn't snow as much. So let's see if we can start. So landed on Saturday around lunchtime, got to the hotel, tried to get to the hotel, sort myself out. And then I think Sunday, met with Eric on Sunday. We both came to the training facility. We had a look around. We had a conversation. We spoke about what we were going to do during the week. We had a nice Sunday. We then went out in the afternoon, had some lunch. So Sunday was a nice, relaxing day. And then, bam, Monday hits, and it is snowing. It is snowing like I've never seen snow before. So obviously, all my life, I've driven on the other side of the road, because in Trinidad, you drive on the same side as in the UK. So I've driven a couple of times in the US, but nothing major. So I'm now thinking, right, this is going to be a challenge here. So Eric drives to training on Monday. So I come in with him on Monday, but I'm now picking up my car to drive back to the hotel. And I'm telling you, I've never driven in those type of conditions before. And I am thinking, this is not going to go well. So I'm just saying to the United States of America, stay clear, because Dennis is on the road. To be fair, I've done it now for a couple of days, and it feels a lot more comfortable. The roads are a bit dry. But those first 2 days, Monday, Tuesday, yeah, what an experience.
Well, not only are you learning to drive on the other side of the road, but then you're doing it in a blizzard, snowstorm, slush, which people that have lived here their whole lives can struggle with if they forget how to do it. So I can appreciate that. And hopefully the snow melts sooner rather than later for you.
Yeah, but it's been good. I think, like in anything in life, if you just get straight into it, then you take it on head on. And I think that's how I've always been. In anything that I've tried to do, whether I'm successful or not, because throughout my life, I've enjoyed highs and lows, I've enjoyed success, I've enjoyed failures, and I think this is what makes you a rounded person. So I just felt, right, you've got to attack it, it's got to be done. So here we go.
So last question before I let you go and get onto your training session is, what are you most looking forward to? Whether it's the nearest thing, like this weekend's game, or whether it's the first home game, or maybe it's the next practice session. Is there any certain thing that you are most looking forward to in the start of this new journey for you?
Yeah, I think it's important for me personally. I think today is going to be the first day that we're actually going to have the full squad, because we had the internationals away. So that for me is the first priority, to meet the full squad, to be able to meet some of the players that I haven't spoke to personally yet, your Boxers and your Timo and these people. So that's the most important thing for me right at this moment in time. And as we go along, then you look forward to that first game, your first home game, interactions with the fans, listening to the Wonderwall song, and it just take it step by step. But for me, I always try and take it as it is in front of me. And the first thing is about today, meeting these players and being comfortable around them, because one of the biggest things for me is trust. I think it's important that you've got to have trust between yourself and the players. They've got to trust me, because what normally happens in a football or a soccer environment is that when a new coach comes in or a new person comes in, it's like all eyes on you. What is he or she about? So they're all looking at me and I'm comfortable with it. So they'll all get to learn about me. I'll get to learn about them. So I think that's my number one priority for now.
Awesome. Well, I thank you so much for taking the time and most importantly, sharing your journey and your story. I just love, you know, I know everybody likes to get into the X and the O's and, you know, people that listen to these podcasts. We have some hardcore soccer fans in the state of Minnesota, and we'll get to that eventually, but I just love hearing your story and just really letting people know who you are, what you're about, and what your journey's been like to get here. I think that's like the biggest thing in a person, and really kind of going forward what it's going to look like. So thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it. Enjoy Minnesota. I hope it's clearing up there soon. Are you guys Philly this weekend? Is that where it is?
Yep, Philly away. So
I haven't seen the weather forecast, but fingers crossed, right?
We shall see. Kendra, thank you very much for
having me. Thanks, Dennis. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. All right, everybody, stay tuned. Segment number two coming up with Justin Ferguson on Sound of the Loons. You don't have to wait for spring to start playing the beautiful game. Starting in February, Minnesota United has a full slate of academy and youth camps scheduled throughout 2024. Show off your skills, take your game to the next level, and enjoy some quality time on the field with MNUFC's licensed academy staff. Visit the camps and combines page on MNUFC.com for more information. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Sound of the Loons. A big week ahead, weekend. I guess it's already Thursday. We got to kind of keep track of where we're at here, but a lot going on with Minnesota United. We've been talking a lot about the first team, but we're also going to talk a lot about the academy and the twos and the 15s and the 17s. I mean, we know that the theory and the thought is that everything is all encompassing. We're just going to call everybody Minnesota United. And we understand that, but we still have to make sure that we give credit where credit is due to the other teams on an individual standpoint. So I get to welcome to me Justin Ferguson. And thank you so much. I was just going to say like exactly what your title is. And then I'm like, wait, we just went over 5 minutes of saying, I'm not really sure what to call you because you've been doing everything. So I guess I could call you Renaissance Man if that works.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a whirlwind, but I think the point that we are all Minnesota United has been especially true in my case. Just trying to help anywhere that I possibly can.
Yeah, get it all done however you can get it done to the best of your abilities. And I know we're asking the same of the players and every single staff member top to bottom during all these transitions, which just leads me to your experience thus far when the transition started happening, and it started happening last year even, right, with some of the first team, when the second team coaches got pulled up and were assistants on the first team, and then the interim becomes the head coach for the interim, Cameron Knowles gets pulled up, people are shuffling around. What has this experience been like for you? And I just want to preface it also by saying, you know, we always ask the players to be agile, to be nimble, to be flexible. And now all of a sudden as a staff, you guys are doing much the same thing.
Yeah, I think in the academy space, we're used to that. We've always been together and trying to help each other. And I think that the cool thing that's happened in the short term in the transition is that it's brought the entire staff together. And as people have come together, whether that's staff transitioning out or staff transitioning in, I think we've done a good job of bringing everybody together and saying, this is what we need to get done. How do we get it done? And then being open-minded to picking up different responsibilities and different roles at different times. As you alluded to, I've been helping lead in the second team space and leading in the second team space at times. And then at the same time, coming down and doing the U17s in my normal role, and then obviously transitioning to help the 15s in any possible way that I can. And certainly if the first team staff needs something or they need help with a piece before the Orlando game, I'm out there on the first team field trying to help them. Again, I think that's the vision of how it should be to some extent. We have that vertical integration from top to bottom with staff. We have a real pathway for staff to continue to progress. We have a pathway for players to continue to progress. And I think it's been exciting in the transition to see things come together and the first team continue to do well in that same time period.
Doesn't it also really kind of, it's a nod to the everybody in the sense that everybody has trust that everybody can get the job done, regardless if you're moving up, down, and sideways, that everybody can step in and get the job done that is necessary in that moment and still end up getting results, because the games are going to happen one way or another. And we're going to get to the Open Cup game that the twos are participating in and went on the road and got a tremendous win. You guys are going to the GA Cup here, leaving tomorrow, hitting the road on Friday for some really great competition for the 15s and the 17s. So it's a nod to everybody in the fact that there's confidence and trust in the group to step in and get the job done.
For sure. And I think that there's, you know, there's obviously a lot of talented people that work here. And I think we're sometimes quick in sporting systems to try and give one person credit. But really, it is the ecosystem. It is everybody that's involved that does a good job, that covers up the gaps where they fall or where they are, and helps continue to progress the club forward. And I think it's really important that that's not one person. That's everybody that is doing all of those roles all the time. And there's many people that have started in the academy space that are now contributing in big ways in the first team space. And maybe that's players, but it's also staff. And I think these types of breaks give people the opportunity, hopefully, to step into those roles and really seize them.
So let's talk about some of these results and the games actually that are on hand and ones, some that you participated in and some that are ahead of you. When you look at the U.S. Open Cup and how it changed a little bit this year with sort of the way it all started and whether it was going to be MLS Next Pro teams or, you know, whether it was going to be MLS First teams, you guys went on the road and just had a tremendous performance and got a 3-0 win off of a hat trick by Jordan Adebayo Smith, but also just a really solid team performance. What can you say about that game? What can you say about that group and going on the road? And what was that experience like for those guys?
Yeah, I think it's special anytime you get to represent the club. And what we've always tried to say is that whoever comes into the club in that space needs to find a way to get a result. And I think what the guys did that night was just come together to find a way to win the game. And it's really easy to say that, and that maybe that's how it should work all the time. But anytime you're on the road going away to an opponent, I think there's a number of things that you're going to have to deal with that you're maybe not prepared for. And what I was really impressed by was that a lot of the young players were able to step into that environment for the first time and still be able to find a way to get a result. And then for Jordan, it's a really special night. It's his 100th professional appearance and he gets to score a hat trick. And I think the way he led the line that night up front was really special because, you know, you're always a little bit emotional. You know, it's Jordan that knows it's his 100th appearance before anybody else does. So I think to realize for himself that he's come a long way and gotten that far is really special. But then also to see on the same field, the same night, there's guys making their first professional appearance. I think it's really special for Jordan to lead them in the way he did.
Well, and what's so cool, I think, about the way the U.S. Open Cup functions, and we've all seen these games where these, even when it's first teams that are going and playing these lower division clubs, and this time it was Chicago House, but the atmosphere, the environment, the energy in these stadiums, all these, and there was a lot of academy guys on this roster that went, but they get to travel and play in these really cool games now, but they've maybe never been in an environment like this. You know, they get to go to cool games and cool places and travel like I didn't get to when I was younger. But now to go to this, where it's like a real fan base and a real energy about it. What was that like for some of those academy guys walking into the stadium during the warmups, just throughout the match itself? Could you kind of see a look in their eye?
Yeah, it definitely felt different. I think the small stadium experience is really important for them. And it's also a really good stepping stone before they have to walk out at Allianz Field. Obviously, Allianz Field is, in my opinion, one of the best experiences in MLS. You've got a really loud fan base as well at Minnesota United. It's really hard to step into that and play if you've only ever had mom and dad on the sideline next to you. So I think it's really important that they get those experiences in between where they can start to step up and deal with what's it like to have a fan yell my name? What's it like to have people boo when we score? What's it like to have people heckle us at times? And to have to go into those environments and learn to manage those emotions. I think it's a really important step for them.
Yeah, these fans, I mean, they do their research too. Like they might start yelling stuff at you that you didn't know was out there, but the beauty of the whole intraweb and everything else, they might start yelling stuff at you that you didn't know was out there. Like even just, you know, like how many siblings you have or something. So that probably takes them back for a quick second when they hear people yelling certain things or calling them by, you know, their first, middle and last name or something like that, like your parent does when you're in trouble. So that's a cool experience. You guys do have a game coming up at Allianz Field, if I'm correct. Yes.
Yes, on the 2nd, I
April
believe.
2nd. It's going to be here before you know it. Not that you have anything going on this weekend, right?
Yeah. I think there's some cool stories that we need to tie together. And I think if you rewind to the LAFC game, you've got Devin Podelford makes the first start for any academy player in MLS for Minnesota United. And if you start with that experience, Devin was in the first academy groups that we had here coming out of COVID. And that's a really special experience for him. But I need to highlight what happened that night. He gets announced and he runs out on Allianz Field and he gets announced as a homegrown. Mm-hmm. Now, the stadium's full of kids there with their parents who get to hear that for the first time and get to see, hey, maybe I can do that too. In the same stadium, the same night, the ball boys are academy kids. And they're the guys trying to get him the ball back in play so that he can get and into position and play well. Some of those guys that are ball boys and some of those guys that make their debuts in the Open Cup game were with Devin his first years in the academy. So we talked to them then about you're writing the history of this club. You're going to be the history of this club. And now some of these guys are actually stepping into roles where they're starting to see those dreams come true. And it's been really special to get to see their progression. Then you get to the Open Cup game. You've got Darius Alisa Randall. You've got Loic Mensavi. You've got Cage Romanchin. You've got Justin Arias. You've got Tamer Ibsays. And you've got Jonah Gasho. With the exception of Loic, they've all played at GA Cup. On the bench, then, you've got a couple more guys that have also played at GA Cup. And really, when they started to make waves in the club, it was the very first year at GA Cup when Alisa Randall turns a couple of Manchester United defenders inside out at the halfway line, plays a ball in behind, and we tie the game 1-1, take it to penalties. Kai Zerun, who's the goalkeeper sitting on the bench in the Open Cup game, and frequently he went to preseason with the first team, he starts for the U17 team. Kai saves 3 penalties that day, and we beat Manchester United. Now, the same time frame, we're down at GA Cup. Cage Romanchin, Tamer Ibsays, Jonah Gasho are part of a group, the first for Minnesota United to get out of our group at GA Cup. So those guys are starting to make waves then that we're just now starting to see the reward from. And I think it's important to understand that the pathway takes time, but also that in 3 short years, we've also started to make progress along that pathway. And to highlight those guys' performance, I think has been really special, but also now to see them winning games for the club in the Open Cup and at second team level, I think is a really important step in the club's growth and in the vertical integration that we've wanted to create. So from top to bottom.
Well, go ahead,
I think it's also important to point out that the head athletic trainer for the club started in the academy. And to see that that pathway exists for Casey, for Cam, for Jeremy, for Adi, for Cristiano, for myself, I think that's gonna be what we hope the history of this club is. And that's going to be what I think will end up pushing it over the edge as we create an atmosphere that is together, that is united in the same sense the name is.
Well, and it's interesting. I know we kind of joked about when Khaled said that he knocked that wall down between the academy and the first team. And like, we're like, whoa, this is symbolism at its best. But I mean, that's like a real thing. I mean, there's a real significance to that as far as this pathway that you're talking about, this togetherness, being united, having sort of a linear, a way of, you know, feeling like you can go about things, you can walk across the hall and share ideas with somebody or talk to somebody about something. And we talk all the time about this is the pathway that, you know, MLS in particular is trying to establish, is these academies, and it's the MLS Next Pro and it's the first team. But then when you actually see it come to fruition and it's not just a talking point in a PowerPoint, you know, I mean, it's real. It's a real thing. It's a real tangible thing for those kids to see when they're younger and they're ball boys and they're coming in, and then they can see what Devin does with the first team.
Yeah. And I think in that space, particularly where the wall was, you've seen it create a lot of collaboration already. And certainly in transitions and organizations, there's a need for collaboration and clear communication. And I think it's created that naturally. But also, for those things to all happen, we had to plant seeds 3 years ago. You know what I mean? And we're now watching those things grow. And everybody wants the immediate success and the immediate first team results. But to see some of those guys be given the time and the resources to come through on their own, that's a credit to them. And it's a credit to the whole staff that's been here to help them progress. Because it's not one person that helped develop Devin. It's the whole sporting staff that did.
Well, and you talk to Devin, I mean, he doesn't hesitate to tell everybody that. I mean, I've had to interview him on several occasions for season ticket member events and small interviews. And anytime he gets the chance, he talks about, first and foremost, his support system from his family, and then to support him through this journey that has been with Minnesota United, basically from day one, once he left his club soccer and joined Minnesota United. It's like his story and his genuine emotion when he talks about it, you can tell it. You can tell it's genuine. You can tell it's not, you know, just again, talking points. This is like he really feels incredibly grateful and blessed. But he put the work in. He put the time in. That's the point you were just making. It's a nice path, but you still have to be willing to put the time and the energy in.
Yeah. And there's plenty of guys now that are going to get the chance right behind him to do the same. And it's the pathway that he paved, but I think it's also your Fred Emmings, your Patrick Weas, and the guys that have come before him as well that have helped kind of create an environment where those guys can continue to progress. And we've seen GA Cup, which is coming up for us this upcoming week, be the foundation for a lot of those guys to realize their dreams and start to get to a bigger stage and make actual steps forward in their progress as players.
And then I just want to ask you about that, about the GA Cup, because here you just had this incredible story about Manchester United, which I'm sure there's a gazillion stories, and what an experience last season in particular for these guys. And I remember talking to someone about it and just saying, what a great experience, and how each team went and watched the other team, supported the other team. It was like a real moment of sort of coming together for the group on top of the results. You guys are hitting the road tomorrow, Friday, to head back down to the GA Cup in Bradenton, Florida, which is a Generation Adidas Cup for anybody who's listening or watching and doesn't know what that is. Some stiff competition ahead of you. We went over the schedule briefly earlier, but the 15s play Orlando City, the Revs, and Arsenal. And then the 17s play Strikers FC, DC United, and PSV Eindhoven. What do you think this group is going to gain from that? Not just results on the field, but in general, the overall just feeling of it. And some of these guys that have never been to it, and some guys who have been to several of these. What do you think? What are your expectations for this group going down there?
Yeah, I think the expectation is to enjoy the experience. But at the same time, we want to make sure that we're looking to get results and really compete. The first year we went down there, we played against Manchester United at both the 15 and 17 age group. And we actually played against Kobbie Mainoo, who made his England debut and Manchester United debut this past season. And I think to see that level of competition, or to understand that that level of competition is at this type of event, is really important for our players. They have to look at the event as an opportunity for themselves to test themselves against some of the best young players in the world. And this is really the premier event in the United States for young, talented soccer players. So for them to look at the event and say, we got to play Arsenal, we got to play PSV. In the past, we've played Celtic and Porto and Ligue MX teams and Manchester United and Arsenal even. So as we step into those games, there's nerves, there's a desire to show who you are, there's a passion for the club and a coming together for the group. And then as we walk around the whole event, there's a unity from the club that I think is really special. We will be there watching the other team's games. We will be there supporting each other. The boys will be there singing. And I think hopefully we'll get some really good results and get to really celebrate those moments as well. Obviously, the expectation that I lay out for any of the groups all the time is to continue to improve on what we've done so far. So at the U17 age group, the first year at GA Cup, we were able to get out of the group. So the goal this year is, can we go further? So it's, can we get out of the group and win a game? The 15s have not gotten out of their own group yet. So the goal very simply is, can we get out of the group? Now the group has Arsenal in it and the group has PSV in it. So it's not going to be easy. But at the same time, I think the way we try and structure it is, you're writing the history of the club. This is as high as somebody's taken it so far. Can you take it one step further? And what we're trying to do with that is get them to aim above other people and really put their imprint. However, the first team got out of the group is not going to be exactly how this team gets out. So you've got to make sure that you progress along the pathway in a way that says, there's a new challenge. We can do it. Other people have done it before us. And let's see exactly how we aim at that. And then at the same time, what we want to take away from it is the vertical integration at the club. So as Eric Ramsey comes in and says, this is how we want the first team to play, and Jeremy steps into the second team space and says, this is how we want the second team to play, we want to make sure that the teams below that are starting to mirror that so that we can get them ready as quickly as possible to be in line with those teams above them so they can step into that space and feel comfortable quickly.
Did that feel like a big transition for you guys in the twos and the academies? Because it is a different style of play. Did that seem like a hard transition, even though it started being implemented in preseason and Cameron was doing it with the first team? Or did it seem like it's not like you've never played another formation before. It's not like you've never played another style, but did that seem difficult or did everyone seem on board?
So at the time, the integration was really easy because it was essentially the same coaches covering below the first team. So we're able to repeat stuff and say, this is exactly what's happening in the other team's session. And the players then are able to pick it up really quickly because it's literally the same messaging, the same words being used, the same activities being used to try and get everyone aligned. And I thought early on, you know, there's always some growing pains with those things. It's different. It's new. But I thought that the players really accepted it really quickly and they bought into the vision really quickly. And they started to say, okay, well, I see this first team guy doing it, so I can do it too. And I think that integration really helps build a belief in what you're doing in the younger spaces. And when they see the first team guys doing it and be successful, then you're starting to say to yourself, okay, well, I better do it too, because I see him doing it and having success. So when Pookie goes and presses and scores, we get a goal off of that, then you also see the younger forwards being like, okay, I need to do that too. And that integration or that collective identity, I think, is really important, because when you see the collective identity, you get more buy-in from the staff, you get more buy-in from the players. And I think it helps accelerate them on the pathway.
And then lastly, I just want to ask you, in this transition, in this time where you've kind of been able to take the reins and shift and be nimble, what's the biggest thing you've learned about yourself before I let you go on your way and continue game planning for the GA Cup?
Yeah, I think I've always been the type of person that I'm a planner. You know what I mean? I think I've always been a planner. Like, I want to have the next steps kind of lined out so that I can kind of know what to expect. And this has very much been like, you know, we can't have a super organized plan in this transition. And I think that's been a little bit frustrating for some people. But at the same time, what I learned about myself was, you don't always have to know exactly what the next step is going to look like. What you have to do is be ready and be flexible enough to adapt to whatever the next step is. And as much as I've said that to players, and as much as I've encouraged that from other people, I think living through this experience has been like, you don't exactly, tomorrow you might show up and the training session might have six guys and you might have to figure out how to do it. Or you might show up and there might be 26 guys and you're going to have to figure out how to do it. And I don't mean that we've just been disorganized in the transition. I simply mean that showing up every day with an open mind to how do I best help the organization has not been the normal linear plan that we would expect maybe a year ago. And that's been a challenge, but it's been a fun one.
Well, awesome. You know what? Six guys at a training just means you got to throw on a penny and participate and hope you don't pull a muscle. That's what that means.
Exactly.
Well, thank you for taking the time. I appreciate it. Oh, you have a really busy schedule. I'm really excited to see what you guys do down in Bradenton and beyond that, of course, as well. But it's always a fun tournament and a good test for everybody. So thanks for taking the time this morning, Justin. I appreciate it. And good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you, Kendra. Thanks for having me.
All right, everybody, that is another episode of Sound of the Loons. Tune in next week, and we'll have a whole nother slate of guests, and we look forward to chatting then. Have a great day, everybody.